spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
Now we can run. Come on, John, come on. Come on. Inside the 10. Head first. He dives inside the 5-yard line.
Yeah.
Curry, way down top. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry.
The Stanley Cup winning Colorado Avalanche. And after 22 years, Raymond Marsh!
It's Thomas at the 50. Stepper,
creating
the 30. To the 20. Thomas to the 10.
Different score. Let's
rock.
Hello and welcome into another episode of Spittin' Sports on GoMileHigh.com. I'm Josh Coleman alongside Evan Brees and LaVon Brown. How you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Doing excellent.
It's a sports fan's Christmas day right now. We got NFL football starting today. Bills-Rams on right now. NBA preseason starts the 30th. Hockey's right around the corner. The season of just baseball is no longer, and it feels great. It feels like I'm a kid in a candy shop right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. Football. That's it. That's all you need. Football.
Right. It's perfect. It's the perfect time of year right now. We're getting to the fall, which means football season. And, you know, let's just jump right into it. We forgot to do this on yesterday's show. We'll just be blatant. Predictions for the Bills-Rams right now. It's currently ongoing, 7-0. Fair amount of turnovers so far in this first half. Who do you guys think is going to win?
I just think the Rams are going to have like a Super Bowl hangover, so I'm taking Bills. I think their defense is solid. Josh Allen's solid, so Bills Mafia, baby.
I think that's a fair point. Fair point.
Yeah, I can't argue with him there. I'm going with Buffalo. Josh Allen looking good. Buffalo's defense playing outstanding, lights out, and they just look great. They look really good. For this being the first game of the season, they look really good. I think they'll continue that, and they'll get the W.
Yeah, I mean, their first possession, it looked like they just jumped right back into it after that divisional game. Their offense didn't skip a beat, really. But it's a bunch. We got a bunch of really good games this weekend. A lot of really good divisional games. I mean, you look at Steelers-Bengals, Packers-Vikings, Chargers-Raiders, Cowboys-Buccaneers, Chiefs-Cardinals, Broncos-Seahawks, Patriots-Dolphins. All just really, really good football games. And I want to start with the Steelers versus Bengals game. Bengals are favored by 6.5. Over under is 44, which I think is low personally. I think the Bengals get there pretty quickly. And before we jump into it, I want to really quickly take a listen to TJ Watt, who took a second to talk about the balanced offense that the Bengals have. He was talking with Steelers Live, and let's take a quick listen.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret that they're a pretty balanced offense. I think they have a lot of key weapons at the skill position, and like I was just discussing, they also revamped the offensive line with a lot of new faces. So I feel like it's going to be a tough challenge for us. We have to establish that we can stop the run, not only against the Bengals, but for the whole season. And that's what setting the tone early is. And like I said, I feel very confident with that. And we know what we can do, and we can pin our ears back in this defense.
And he mentioned the new faces on the Bengals offensive line, which I think is the biggest piece for them this offseason, not only for their run game, but Joey B and his health. What do you guys think? How do you think this game's going to play out?
I mean, you know, it's kind of tough to say. I think personally, in my opinion, I think the Bengals run on the Super Bowl last year was a little phony. And I don't think they were the best team from the AFC conference. But they did get some really good additions. They did boost the O-line. I definitely think Ja'Marr Chase, second year, he's going to go off. But he could be double covered a lot more just because people know about him now. But overall, I think the Bengals are going to do good. And also, just looking at the Steelers, they got two rookies that can make an impact immediately. I know they're going with Mitch Trubisky to start it. But later in the season, I think the Steelers' defense is very solid still. So they could be pretty good towards the end of the first season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the first game of the season. So just about anything that's bad that can happen probably will happen. And when you revamp your offensive line and things like that, people expect immediate results, you know. And Joe Burrow was sacked a whole lot, and he was hit a whole lot last year, which is why they revamped the O-line. So if he starts taking hits, then it looks like, okay, well, nothing has changed. But it's going to take time for that O-line to mesh and to gel and things to come together. I think that Cincinnati is still a very, very well-coached, very, very balanced football team. So the thing about it is you need the O-line to – if you can't protect your quarterback, you still need to open up holes for your run game. You know, you keep the defense honest. So we'll see. We'll just see how this game turns out. I honestly think Cincy's going to win it, though.
I do, too. They're the 6.5-point favorite. I think that they'll live up to that, probably win by a little bit more. But with the addition of Malik Reed for the Steelers, who was just traded there by the Broncos, and then TJ Watt, do you guys put a lot of stake in potentially Joe Burrow getting sacked 3 times? It doesn't sound like you guys would be in a state of panic, but would you kind of start to feel that way if he's sacked 3-4 times in the first week?
No, because that's normal for him. He gets sacked a lot. That's just what he does, you know. So, because TJ Watt, that defense, they're excellent defenders. I mean, that guy, he's gonna get to Burrow. Burrow's probably gonna get sacked about 3 or 4 times. The thing is, they have some big play receivers, you know, that can make plays down the field. So. If he does start taking some hits and getting sacked and things like that, I wouldn't push the panic button, but I'd be watching very closely. I put it like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it would shock me if he got sacked a couple times. They are playing in Cincinnati, so the crowd will be there to help, you know, just the energy level. But I wouldn't be surprised either. Okay. You know, they're solid.
Okay. And I feel like that's the kind of understanding around the team right now, is it's a lot of new faces on that offensive line. It's going to take a game or two to mesh. And then obviously new faces with the Packers and Vikings, specifically for the Vikings, their head coach. Packers lose their biggest face in Devontae Adams. How do you guys think that game's going to go? Packers are a 1.5-point favorite. I think that's probably going to be stand pretty true to how the game's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying this yesterday. I think if the Vikings can find a way to win this game, they take over the NFC North. Immediately, week one, you know? I definitely think losing Devontae Adams is going to hurt the Packers. But Aaron Jones is still a beast. You know, A.J. Dillon, their run game is fine. And their defense is also spectacular. So the Packers can easily win this. Vikings can easily win this. You know, it's a matchup. That's why it's a, you know, 1.5 favorite for the Packers. It can go either way.
Yeah, and I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, this game is a toss-up. It's one of them early season matchups that you really just can't pinpoint. A clear-cut winner. The loss of Devontae Adams is truly, truly going to hurt Green Bay. Losing a caliber player like that would hurt anybody. Okay, but because he was a lot of Green Bay's success. Now Aaron Rodgers doesn't have that big, you know, money-making wide receiver to throw to. So how that's going to look, I don't know. Their defense is excellent, so. And then the Vikings, on the flip side, they have big play receivers. I mean, so it's just one of them games. It's a matchup. I can't even make a pick on it. I'm leaning more toward Minnesota, unfortunately. That's just how I'm feeling in a close one.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I would probably take Minnesota right now just because who is going to step up for the Packers in their receiving game? Are we going to see it week one or is it going to happen week three? And I'm leaning towards probably later in the season because rookies aren't going to first week just pop off, and Alan Lazard, while we're all expecting for that to happen, who knows? It's a toss up right now, and I think Aaron Jones is probably going to have the best game out of anybody for the Packers.
I think what I'm most excited to see just throughout the year for the Packers is how long it's going to take for Aaron Rodgers to actually just like show his frustration on the field, not having a legit number one receiver like he hasn't had in a while. So I'm excited to see that and see what he can do with it.
Yeah, no, that's a good point because plays with a lot of emotion, and he's already in the media said our rookies, they need to be better. They need to get back up or get into the flow of NFL pace and offenses. So that's a valid point. And another divisional matchup, Chargers Raiders, probably one of the more intriguing ones of the entire weekend because both of these teams knew Devontae Adams, new defense, Khalil Mack on the other side for the Chargers. This is a game where it's another kind of 50-50.
Yeah. You know, for me, I'm really excited to see what the Raiders offense looks like with Devontae Adams, you know, considering that he already has, you know, built He already has a friendship with the quarterback, with Carr. So they know each other very well. I'm pretty sure they've had some conversations about, hey, you know, do this, and we're going to do this. And it's just going to be interesting to see. The Chargers have a pretty stout defense, though. The Chargers have a very, very stout defense. We'll have to see. I'm leaning toward the Raiders.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I have to agree with that. I think the reason I think I truly think the Raiders are going to win this is because even though it's in L.A., if you're playing at the Chargers Stadium, it's a home game for you because the crowd will always be there. There's also, I mean, a ton of L.A. Raiders fans that still live there, so they'll show out. But, yeah, I agree with LaVon. I'm excited to see the Raiders offense and the Chargers defense, but most importantly, just because this is AFC West and they're so stacked, I would love to see who comes out on front, you know, the first week. Who's going to be ahead after week one?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll be the lone dissenter. I'm taking the Chargers in this game. Justin Herbert looked like an MVP-caliber quarterback last year. I think he's going to take that step this year. The defense just continues to get better. And the Raiders, while their offense is great, their defense still has some question marks. And I think Justin Herbert is going to take advantage of those. So that's where I stand with that. But I respect it because that game is kind of 50-50. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this one yesterday. So we can skip Cowboys-Bucks. We already know LaVon is picking the Cowboys. I think we both unanimously picked the Bucks yesterday. Mm-hmm. So Chiefs-Cardinals. This is another one. Chiefs, new look offense, a lot of new faces. Cardinals, no DeAndre Hopkins. Marquise Brown now in there. Kyler Murray, pre-Call of Duty drop, so he's going to be good. What do you guys think happens in this matchup?
I mean, you know, I'm excited to see the Chiefs because they had a really good offseason, I think. And a lot of people, you know, now the AFC West is stacked. They're saying, like, oh, is this the year that someone else finally wins the AFC West, blah, blah, blah. But I'm excited to see how they do with that transition with a new team. I also really like to see how Kyler Murray is going to respond, just having a new Marquise Brown. Zach Ertz, I believe, is questionable. So, you know, he's not going to have the studs that he usually has, but he's usually really good coming out of the gate. So I think personally, if I had to take this game, who am I picking? I'm probably going with the Chiefs.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to take the Chiefs as well, but I am a little skeptical. And the reason being is like, look, and I've been saying losing Tyreek Hill, that's going to hurt them. That's going to hurt them very, very badly. Because I know you get Juju Smith-Schuster, and he's an excellent receiver, but he's not the big home run hitting playmaking receiver that Tyreek Hill was. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on Patrick Mahomes and Kelce to make more plays, and even Juju Smith-Schuster. The Cardinals, on the other hand, you know, Kyler Murray, excellent athlete, excellent quarterback. Something's going on with him, maturity. I'm wanting to see, like, if things start getting, like, just not good, but just going a little bad, how's he going to respond to that adversity, mm-hmm. you know, considering the criticism that has recently, you know, come out. I want to see what his mindset is and how he looks and how he's able to handle that pressure. But I'm going to have to take the Chiefs in this one. You know, I'll take Mahomes and company, and we'll see.
Yeah, I've kind of flip-flopped on this game because I think James Conner showed a lot last year, kind of resurged for the Cardinals. And without those weapons, they're going to have to run the football a little bit more. The Chiefs' defense is lacking in that department. So I could see the Cardinals really kind of putting an emphasis on the run game, trying to wear down that defense and resulting in a win. But for me, I think I'm going to agree with you guys and take the Chiefs. I will say the 6-point margin as well is probably pretty accurate for where I stand as well. Last matchup I want to hit, though. Broncos-Seahawks, Monday night game. First time we'll get to see Russell Wilson in a Broncos uniform back in his former town in Seattle. It's going to be an emotional game. Pretty much the first year head coaching staff for the Broncos. The 6.5-point favorite seems to be pretty unanimous amongst everybody. Everybody's kind of picking the Broncos, but do you think that they struggle a little bit early in this game trying to just get comfortable with all the first years?
I think they do. Okay. It's going to be a lot of emotions, you know, especially, you know, for Russell Wilson here. The coaching staff, you know, they're going to be looked at, you know, closely. I think it'll probably take a quarter for them to get settled in, get Russell Wilson settled in, and then I think they'll probably, you know, crush Seattle by more than six. I think they beat Seattle by more than six. Russell Wilson's going to have a monster game against Seattle. I'll give them three touchdown passes at least.
Yeah, no, I agree with LeVon. I definitely think it'll take about a quarter. So, I mean, that first quarter is going to be all Broncos defense to rely for them to be able to have the lead after the first quarter. But, yeah, no, I agree. I think Russ is going to dominate. Broncos win by more than 6.5. I'm actually surprised that it's only 6.5.
Yep, me too.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 6.5 seems like too small of a spread right now for this game because Seattle, Geno Smith starting that game. He's never really been a starting caliber quarterback. He knows that system the best over Drew Lock, but it seems like the safe pick that Drew Lock was chosen against last year with Teddy Bridgewater. So I'm right there with you guys. I think the Broncos win this game by more than 6.5. Over-under's 45. Do you think they hit that? Just really quickly, you think they get to 45?
Yeah, 100%. Broncos alone, 45.
Absolutely.
Bold take, but I like it. Stick with us, though, through this break as we come back, talk a little college football, Dabo Swinney's new contract before we dive into some more matchups here on Spittin' Sports on GoMileHigh.com.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence,
really?
Flowing robes, grace, bald, striking, really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing.
Oh.
See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
It's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
If it's great radio you're looking for, then you're in the right place. Because at GoMileHigh.com, we have tons of shows discussing sports, news, politics, entertainment, community affairs, and much, much more. And don't forget, if you miss out on one of your favorite shows, you can always access our archived episodes at GoMileHigh.com on your own time.
If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
Hey, Colorado sports fans. You're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, fans! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
This is Spin Sports on GoMileHigh.com.
Back here on Spittin' Sports on GoMileHigh.com. Diving into some college football now after we talk some NFL. Want to start with the massive extension that Dabo Swinney got today. He signed a 10-year, $115 million contract to stay at Clemson. And it comes off of his worst season at Clemson, comes off the heels of that. Also another massive extension that he got four-ish years ago. But there's some interesting terms for the contract. According to the term sheet, if Sweeney leaves to become the Alabama head coach in 2022, he would owe a $9 million buyout. That number is $6 million in the same year if he leaves for another team. So Clemson is just straight up refusing to let him go to Alabama, a place where I'm not even sure that he would end up.
Yeah, I don't understand that. That's just me. I'm like, why Alabama? Why would you put that in his club? Maybe they know something that we don't. Maybe there's something happening behind the scenes and there's been some movement, but I thought that was shocking. I was surprised to see that.
Right. It's a weird term to have in your
exactly.
contract.
It's almost like Bama wants him after Nick Saban retires. You know what I mean? You get a younger coach with experience like him.
Well, and does it mean, does like Clemson and Bama, are they having phone calls like, hey, I think Saban's retiring in the next couple
years?
Yeah,
right.
And then they're like, well, now we got to give Dabo a massive contract and he can't go to Alabama. Because that would be the only other place where really his recruiting gets better.
Mm-hmm. Literally, I agree. But you know what's one thing I think it's kind of, not quite a double-edged sword, but I think what's kind of strange about extending him this way, like after he did 4 years ago, is just because like if Clemson has a bad recruiting class 1 year and they have even a worse season than last year, are you really going to blame the coach and just fire him? Or you know what I mean? Like, or is it just you had a bad class, they didn't mesh well, there was some trouble off field? I don't really know, but it's kind of strange.
Right. You then have to, what's the barometer for success?
Mm-hmm.
And they have stipulations as well for like if Clemson fires him without cause, it would owe him $64 million in 2022 and 2023. Then it would be 60 in 2024 and 2025, 57 in 2026. So the final years would pay him the remaining compensation left on the deal. If he's fired with cause, he gets none of the money.
That's insane.
That's just crazy.
That's insane.
It's just like through and through a wild contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey Dabo, we're gonna fire you. We have no cause. So here's $57 million, and pack your bags and get out of here. I mean, really?
Yeah. Like,
that's just crazy to me.
Well, and wow. what even is cause in college football? Because you get fired if you're not succeeding,
exactly.
Which is a cause.
That's the cause. You're not winning.
Right.
What do you mean without cause? That doesn't make any sense to me.
That's what I was reading as well. I was like, I don't get it.
Unless they're thinking like a John Gruden comes up somewhere.
Oh, okay. Okay, I can right. see like maybe, but that's still a cause.
Yeah,
like, that's
yeah.
still a reason to terminate you.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah,
like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I didn't either. But I saw that and I was like, I don't understand how you would fire anybody without a cause. You can't do that at any job in general, anyway.
Yeah.
So I thought it was interesting that they built it into his contract. And then the last, he's got incentives as well: $150,000 bonus for a college playoff appearance post expansion, increased semifinal, adds 50 grand and another 50 if they get to the championship, and bonuses as well if they win, increased bonus for ACC championship by 50 grand and increase his maximum bonuses from 105 million to 1.5, so just giving him more money essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that, how does one get all of this money? How do you do
that? Yeah, I know, right?
I don't understand. That's why those coaches be so mad when they're on the sideline yelling and screaming at players. It's like, well, you're about to cost me a couple million dollars. Yeah. Y'all better get with the program. You better run harder, faster, stronger, because I want my 1.5 mil.
Right.
I mean, that's it.
I don't want you getting me fired for no cause. So.
Yeah. You know, I'll still take 57 mil to the bank.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll take whatever. It's an 11.5, where it starts at 10.5 million, can work its way up to 12.5 throughout the duration. That's just the base salary. So he's making he's making more money than some of the Clemson players in the NFL.
To put that in perspective. 100%.
Wow.
There's only six or seven Clemson players who make more than Dabo Sweeney in the NFL.
Is he making more than any NFL coach on that contract, do you think?
I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure he's making
sure
more
he
than some.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Wow.
Yeah. But jumping into topic or matchups, we'll start with the college game day matchup of the week. I know that we don't feel that it's the matchup of the week, but Alabama versus Texas. Alabama's the 20-point favorite, has unbelievable money line odds if you want to just waste your money at -1400. Over-under 65.5. Who do you have winning this game? How much do you have Alabama winning by is the better question.
Texas has a pretty good offense. They got Bijan Robinson, Quinn Ewers. You know, he looked good last week. But the thing is, it's Bama. We're always going to say that, you know? So it's like, how much they win by, I guess, varies on how much Texas scores. But 20 to 30 range sounds about right, so.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I'm surprised that it's so low. I'm surprised that it's only 20. I think Alabama, you know, Saban doesn't lose to former assistant coaches and mm-hmm. things like that. And I don't think Sarkisian's going to get it done. I think Texas, this game will probably be over in the second quarter. That's what I'm thinking. Texas may get some late scores in the fourth to kind of cut it. But I'm thinking 28 to 30, maybe, something like that. But
do you think Bama gets more turnovers and Texas gets touchdowns?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Ooh, that's an excellent question.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I think yes. Because realistically, I'm thinking Texas scores maybe at most three times, and I think Bama could cause at least two fumbles and two interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we'll see. And I just had a thought, and I was like, you know what? Sarkisian knows Saban pretty well. He might try to do some sneaky stuff, you know, a couple trick plays here or there.
Fake punt.
I still think they lose by 20. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
With the fake punts and trick plays and fumbleruskies. Well, that's an old play. They can't even do that play anymore. It's banned. But I try it to beat Alabama. I do it illegally. But
even with all that, I don't think they beat Bama.
No.
No.
But jumping into the three ranked games, ranked teams playing ranked teams, Baylor versus BYU. The surprising one, BYU on DraftKings, is the 3-point favorite here. And that is surprising to me. I would have taken Baylor. What do you guys think about BYU? Am I missing something on this team?
Man, first off, kudos to Baylor for going up to Provo. Man, that's just an intriguing matchup there. I like this matchup. BYU's offense is really, really good. I don't think they get enough credit. I think BYU is going to win by about 7.
Okay.
I really, really do. That crowd is going to go crazy. I mean, this is a Big 12, really, a Big 12 game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now you're going to see what these upcoming games are going to look like. This is going to be an excellent game. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. I think it's the game of the week, in my opinion. You know, I think they'd be up in Provo this weekend. But, you know, I think, honestly, Baylor doesn't get enough credit. I think, you know, they're probably one of the best basketball football schools, like, in the country. No one ever really talks about it that much. And them to be at number 10 right now, going into Provo, another playing a ranked team, I genuinely think they can win this game and really set their season at a high expectation right after it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Personally, liked Baylor more than BYU. I understand BYU's got a stellar offense and have gotten better pretty much every year in the last, what, 3-4 years. They've mm-hmm. consistently improved.
Yeah.
But to me, Baylor just is the better team in this one. Provo is a tough environment to play, and that's why I think that BYU potentially has that 3-point edge. But that's going to be an interesting one. One of the better games of the weekend. Tennessee Pitt, this is going to be another fun one as well. Tennessee, another underdog. Picked as the favorite, 6-point favorite, in fact, over-under set at 67 in this game. It's just projected to be a scoring affair. Who do you think wins?
I mean, honestly, you know, Slovis and Pitt didn't really convince me of how good they were last week. So they're playing in Pitt, right? Am I right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see how they can do against an SEC school. But, you know, once again, I don't think Tennessee's as good as they were when they had Manning. You know, they're gotten a lot better in the last couple of years. But I still think I got Tennessee, actually, in this one. I think this is a big win for Tennessee.
You know, this is kind of a toss-up game for me. But I liked what I saw in Pitt
mm-hmm.
Last week.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
There were some times where things were a little sketchy. It looked like things could go south, but they were able to get back on track. Got the W. Slovis, you know, played pretty well, especially after halftime. I think they'll be stoked. I'm going to take Pitt here. I'm going to take Pitt by about 8.
I'm kind of 50-50 with this one. I lean both sides, where I think Slovis and Pitt could really show us what they're made of this week. And I'm not going to say steamroll Tennessee, but kind of put it to them initially and kind of make the Vols a little scared of what's going to happen. But I think I'm with Ev. I think Tennessee is going to win this one. Pitt just, they looked good, but not good enough to consistently keep that rolling into this week. My game of the week, Florida versus Kentucky. I think this is going to be a really interesting matchup. Florida jumped to that 12th spot after the upset over Utah last week. And actually, we have an audio clip from Billy Napier, who was asked if he held anything back last week against Utah as the unranked team. And this is what he had to say.
We got to do whatever we need to do to win each week. I mean, we don't hold anything back. It's a single event, right? It's a single mission, right? We're trying to capture, defend something. We're going to do everything that we can to win the game, right? And we never hold anything back. I mean, that life, that world does not exist in college football, in my opinion, certainly with the approach that we want to take. So I think we're more focused on the execution piece. I think we have work to do when it comes to detail and discipline to execute, fundamentals and techniques, communication, alignment, eye discipline, in-game decision-making. I mean, those are the things that we're focused on right now. We need to improve in those areas. But it is, as coach speak as it sounds, it is truly one week at a time, one competitive event at a time.
And you heard him right there talk about they don't hold anything back week to week, which is the approach you need to have in college football. I think it's an absurd question to even ask him if they were holding anything back as the underdog in that game. You kind of got to throw the house at it. But I think he brings up a good point of you have to take it one week at a time, every game, every competitive venture, essentially. Against Kentucky this week, Kentucky's ranked number 20. Florida's the 6-point favorite, but again, another kind of offensive explosion, over under at 52.5. Who do you think is going to win this game? Because I'm taking Florida here.
I liked what I saw in Florida last week because, earlier in the conversation that we were having about the Florida-Utah game, I had actually picked Utah to go down there and beat them. It was a very competitive game, so I'm not even upset with the pick. But I was impressed with Florida's ability to fight off adversity when it came and was able to get the win at home, which is why I'm going to take them this week on the road to beat Kentucky. So, that's exactly. They're not going to hold anything back. They know that they can win big games, and I expect them to continue to do the same this week.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, Florida definitely proved last week that they should be ranked. I don't know about, top 12 yet. That was a huge bump. But I definitely think, 4 or 5 years ago, it was like Kentucky was like their first time beating Florida in like 20 years or something.
Something like that.
Something crazy. And ever since then, Kentucky's actually competed with them pretty well over the last couple of years. So I think now that it's in Kentucky, they got a stacked – or not stacked team, but a really, really solid group of guys. I see Kentucky coming out with the win here, showing Florida that they should not be ranked that high just because they beat, a phony Pac-12 team in Utah at home.
I will give you that. I was a little surprised to see Florida jump from unranked to number 12, just one spot over Utah. It felt like it was a drastic move by the committee that just went, oh, my God, they won.
Yeah, it's not like Florida beat Utah by like 40, like Oregon did, or Georgia did to Oregon, They beat them by like 4.
Yeah, it was a really good,
really, really, really good competitive game.
I think Florida, though, Anthony Richardson looked really good last week. Their receivers looked really good. I think that they're going to have the edge. Last game that I want to talk about, we can quickly do this one, USC-Stanford. USC is the 8.5 point favorite, over under at 67. Quickly, who you got winning this game?
quick and short, USC, I don't think Stanford's like they were like a decade ago. I think they're just not as good, not as high-powered five-star players like USC. They looked good last week against Rice, too, so USC.
I know USC and all that high-profile players and coach that they got. This is a trap game for them, but I'll go ahead and take USC. They're going to have some struggles with Stanford early.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that USC is going to come out on top, but I think they are going to struggle with Stanford just a little bit at the start of this game. But I think Lincoln Riley, I already said it once on the show. I think Lincoln Riley is going to take that offense to levels where potentially that Reggie Bush era was at, where they were just the most dominant offense in college football. So I think that they're going to win that game.
I think if that game wasn't in Palo Alto, it would be USC by a million.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I agree with you there. But we will take a quick break and come back with the Mile High Minute, talk some Emmanuel Sanders moving retirement farewell speech, and then a little CU Air Force as well. This is Spittin' Sports on GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans, you're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, fans! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Show-y.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now. More than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
So I'm taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence,
really?
Flowing robes, grace, bald, striking, really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing.
Oh.
See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands in Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
It's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
If it's great radio you're looking for, then you're in the right place. Because at GoMileHigh.com, we have tons of shows discussing sports, news, politics, entertainment, community affairs, and much, much more. And don't forget, if you miss out on one of your favorite shows, you can always access our archived episodes at GoMileHigh.com on your own time.
If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
More Spittin' Sports next on GoMileHigh.com.
40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
What you've all been waiting for, the Mile High Minute. Up next on Spittin' Sports on GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, yeah!
Back here on Spittin' Sports on GoMileHigh.com. It is now time for the Mile High Minute. We'll start off by talking about Emmanuel Sanders, who announced his retirement yesterday After 5 years, after playing for the Broncos for 5 years, retired a Bronco, and it was just, it was a sad but joyful day. It was sad to see him go, but, you know, felt right. Felt right. But we quickly have an audio clip of Emmanuel Sanders thanking the city of Denver from the Broncos, and we'll give that a listen.
To the city of Denver and the Broncos organization, John Elway, Peyton Manning, the Bowling family, just to name a few, thank you for embracing me for 6 years. Those were some of the best years of my life. I'll never forget hoisting that Lombardi trophy and riding on that fire truck next to my son, Demaryius Thomas, during the parade with a million people in attendance. That was one of the best days of my life. The memories in this building I will cherish forever.
It's just, one, I got chills bringing up that the parade because it was the first one in so long here in Denver. It was electric. But my question for you guys, what do you think about Emmanuel retiring a Bronco? Would it have changed your feelings on his retirement if he hadn't?
I mean, it definitely would. It would have stung a little bit if he did the Steelers. I'd have been like, come on, bro. Like, you won a Super Bowl here. But yeah, no, he made the right decision. And, you know, I really liked how he, a lot of the press conference, he was talking about how much, like, he retired mainly because of DT. You know what I mean? How much he was a best friend to him and how, you know, him passing away was such a emotional piece to him playing still. So I'm just happy he came back to the Broncos, though. Hopefully he gets into the Ring of Hall or the Ring of Fame for the Broncos, but who knows?
Yeah, I think it was the right thing for him to do. I mean, the city embraced him. He embraced the city. He won a Super Bowl here. You know, and a lot of fans and things don't understand the ongoings of the business of football. And not everyone is going to stay in the same place for 10, 12 years. You know, like, look at a guy like Brady. I mean, even he had to go, you know. So I liked it. I liked the speech. And I liked that he went out on his own terms. You know, those are some of the things. He didn't stay around too long. Some, you know, like boxers and other athletes, fighters, they stay in the ring or playing too long. And then they hurt themselves. He went out. He's in great health. He has his family there. It's a great move. Great move. Kudos to him.
Right. I think he's moving back to Denver. Or do you think he's going back to his home state of Texas?
I wouldn't be surprised if he has a home in both.
Oh, 100%.
Just because Denver, it's so nice here to be in the summer. It's warm. You got everything in the world that you can do. Go to the city, the mountains. Mm-hmm. And then potentially in the winter when it starts to get too cold, just go back to Texas and live in the heat down there. I think that's probably what he would do. But I wouldn't be surprised if he moved back to Denver. I mean, Peyton Manning lives in Denver after playing here for only 4 years, and he easily could have moved back to Indiana, who accepted him for, what, 15 years of his career, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. Like, Denver's just such a welcoming place, and the fans here really do a great job of embracing everybody who comes through the doors and making them feel like they are a part of, like, the, yes, I know it's Broncos country, but, like, that family aspect of the Broncos. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I personally just think, like, if I would play, you know, in some sports league and I was played for 4 or 5 teams and one of the teams we won a championship with, I'm keeping my house in that place because mm-hmm. I always be coming back there knowing that I won a title there. You know what I mean? So he'll definitely still has his house here in Denver. He'll definitely live here, come and visit, you know, all that stuff. So
yeah, I actually wouldn't be surprised if week two he's at the Broncos game.
Me either.
I think that would be a pretty good spot for him to be. Next one for you. Favorite memory of Emmanuel? Because I know mine. It's after the Broncos won the 2015 the AFC Championship game. I almost just said West Championship game. AFC Championship, and it's him and DT playing in the confetti after beating the Patriots. It's just like such a wholesome moment that after the DT passing, you look back on it, and it just warms your heart a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I don't really necessarily know my favorite moment. But yeah, that one was really special. I think him just, you know, joining the Broncos over the Chiefs, like, that's a good one. But I definitely remember my least favorite, Emmanuel Sanders. Remember when we played the Rams? I think it was 2013-14 when he looked like he folded in half backwards.
Laid out for the ball on the sideline and the safety came with ill intent and just lit him up.
That was one of the scariest things. I was like, oh my God, I hope he's not like career over.
I thought he died for a second.
Like broken back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier, Ring of Fame potentially for the Broncos. I think I could see him in the Ring of Fame. Do you see him potentially in Ring of Fame and Hall of Fame or just the Broncos Ring of Fame?
Hall of Fame, no. No way. I mean, maybe, but he didn't play long enough. He doesn't have enough rings. He doesn't have any records. He's just a Bronco who won a Super Bowl. So I think for the Ring of Fame, I think eventually, I don't know, in the next like 5 years, I mean, Ed McCaffrey's not even in the Ring of Fame. So there's no way you can put in Emmanuel Sanders like next week. You know what I mean? So maybe like a decade or two.
No, I think that's fair. I'll see him.
Yeah, that's kind of a 50-50. You know, you have so many great players and there's so little room in the stadium for everybody who's contributed to be recognized in the Ring of Fame. I mean, it's just one of those things. The city of Denver will never forget him. And, if I'm a player, that's enough for me. But I don't think he's going to make the Ring of Fame. Like you said, you have other players who haven't even made it, who have been here longer, who have probably broken a few records. So we'll just have to see. Yeah, like Evan said, it's not going to happen soon. It'll probably happen later down the line. And if it does, I'll be happy for him.
Mm-hmm. I also think him re-signing with the Broncos, you know, yesterday and retiring was a step into becoming a Ring of Fame in the Hall of Fame or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a step in the right direction for sure. And I could see him both being in the Ring of Fame and not, because the Broncos is such a storied franchise. They have so many talented players that have come through that building along with talented teams and coaches. So it's tough. And Sanders is stacking up against quite a lot of talent. I mean, you think about guys in that Ring of Fame right now, John Elway, Peyton Manning. I believe Champ Bailey's in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
John Lynch. Mecklenburg. Like, there's so many guys. Atwater.
Right.
There's so many guys that you just look at it and go, does Sanders stack up? Right now, maybe not. But in a couple of years, 5, 10, 15, 20, he might. So
I think even though DT has passed away, he will be in the Ring of Fame before Emmanuel Sanders.
I think DT goes not only for his career, but the way he passed and what he did for the Broncos. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different for those two stories, but I agree with you there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Jumping back into college football, you know, we had to. Mile High Minute. Got two Colorado teams playing this week. CU, Air Force. CU's at Air Force. Air Force is a 17.5-point favorite. Over-under's 49. I think I might have to side with the majority. I think Air Force is going to win this game by a lot.
Oh, absolutely. That run game is going to crush Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was at the CU game last week, and, you know, CU, their defense was fine in the first half, but as the game went on, you could just tell their tackling was piss poor. Like, they looked like high schoolers trying to tackle NFL guys. So I think that, you know, with the triple option, that's going to be like their biggest problem. Like, if I was their head coach, Carl Durrell, I'd be sitting there doing tackle drills all week. Make sure the guys are ready for on-the-line tackles, on the the line of scrimmage and all that stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know about 17.5. That's a little insane because, you know, CU, like, they still have some good offense. So, you know, I don't – and if the under is, what is it, 44? Would you say 49?
49, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 17.5, like CU is going to get probably 3 touchdowns. So I don't see Air Force putting up 40, you know what I mean, with the triple. I doubt that, but you never know.
I'm telling you.
You think 40?
That triple option is potent.
Oh, yeah. No.
It's potent. You just got to see how the defense is going to stack up against it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you said, because if you're missing tackles like they were doing last week against a power rushing team like Air Force, yeah, then by the time the third and fourth quarter comes around, those holes are going to be, I mean, you could probably score a touchdown or something.
Against CU, no doubt.
Against CU, you know, running behind, you know, a line that's opening up those holes. The triple option is just, you don't know where the ball is at. So you have to make those tackles. We'll see. I like it. I think it's probably be more than 17.
I think it's just a big matchup for CU because when they last played Air Force, it stung the way they lost to them. So there's this couple players who are still there who felt it. And, you know, they want to get some revenge in their stadium. So I could see them kind of stepping up because of that. But I'll agree with you guys and say Air Force takes the W. But
I think it's going to be a close game.
I don't think it's 17. That's, like, absurd.
Yeah, that's almost too wide of a margin. Yeah. And you bring up that last matchup, Air Force 130-23. That's heartbreaking in 2019. But I don't know. I think Air Force's triple option is just going to slice and dice and wear down CU too much for them to be able to handle it. I think they do score 3 touchdowns, so I think that's accurate.
Yeah, I'm most excited to see how CU's coaching staff does because they looked really bad last week. Just got to readjust and see what you missed and see how this week goes.
Yeah, I agree. But we will take a quick break, come back with our last segment, talk a little U.S. Open and potentially some Aaron Judge as well. This is Spittin' Sports on GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans, you're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, fans! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Show-y.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know, from getting all this great experience working in college radio. It makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence,
really?
Flowing robes, grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing.
Oh.
See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed 2 eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama.
Uh-huh.
They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
It's great.
GoMileHigh.
If it's great radio you're looking for, then you're in the right place. Because at GoMileHigh.com, we have tons of shows discussing sports, news, politics, entertainment, community affairs, and much, much more. And don't forget, if you miss out on one of your favorite shows, you can always access our archived episodes at GoMileHigh.com on your own time.
If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
All right, you're listening to Spin Sports on GoMileHigh.com.
Let's ride.
Back here on Spin Sports on GoMileHigh.com, the second half of the Bills-Rams game just got underway. It is tied 10-10. It's been a fairly ugly first half. Lots of turnovers from both teams, but just wanted to quickly update you on that. Let's jump into segment 4 with Francis Tiafoe making it to the U.S. Open semis after beating Rafa Nadal. He becomes it's the first win for American men in open quarters since the start of 2007. Thanks to Tiafoe, the U.S. men got their first win. They were 0-7 until Wednesday. And I know
our resident tennis expert here, LeVon. He was really excited about this, was impressed with him the entire time. What did you think of his match?
Well, first off, kudos to the young man, you know, for reaching the semis. Excellent. Rafa Nadal is such a staple in tennis. I mean, when people talk about the greatest male tennis player, I mean, there's only a few names you're going to throw out there. You're going to throw out, of course, Rafa, Federer, Novak Djokovic, those type of guys. And for this young man to be able to beat a legend like that, you know, on the biggest stage of his career, that was excellent. So I was excited for him. You know, and Rafa's my favorite. Rafa's my guy. I love Rafa, but I love this young man. And he showed some resilience, and he fought and battled, and that's what you got to do in order to, you know, to win matches. So he did that.
Yeah, it was a big win for him. He's got 4 opening set tiebreaker wins as well at this year's Open, which ties the most ever for a man at the event since 1970 when tiebreakers were introduced. And then there's been 6 American men to reach semifinals of a major since 2004 with Agassi, Gianpri, Roddick, Isner, Carey, and Tiafoe now. It's just been a big moment for American men in tennis. Not necessarily something that happens a lot. He's going to mean a lot to not only just American tennis, but all the kids watching tennis growing up right now who are seeing it going, oh, I can do that. That could be me.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is he's so young. He's like 20, 23, 24, something like that. I don't know exactly how old he is, but he's young. And so he's an inspiration for, you know, young kids who see another person that young with that much success. It's like, hey, you know what? If Francis Tiafoe can make it to the semis, then, hey, I could do it too. And I think that's, you know, what young people are looking for.
He's 24 years of age.
Yeah, 24. I mean, that is awesome.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what you said, you know, beating Nadal, I like to compare, like, Federer and Nadal to kind of, like, Messi and Ronaldo. Like, they've been by far the best two of this generation. I mean, yeah, there's Djokovic and Andy Murray who had his time, but those two were so dominant. So to be able to beat Nadal in the U.S. just shows how special and how serious this really is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be something to continue to watch. He's going to have that stage for quite some time, but let's quickly jump into Aaron Judge, who just continues to hit the baseball out of the ballpark at an alarming rate. He's currently got 55 home runs with 26 games left. He's 6 shy of tying former Yankee Roger Maris for the American League single season home run record of 61, which has been held since 1961, ironically, but for Maris. He's on pace to hit 66 home runs if he were to play in all 26 of these last games, and he needs 18 to catch or tie Barry Bonds' single season MLB record of 73, which is he has to homer in 69% of his remaining games to catch him. Do you think he can do it?
He doesn't catch Barry Bonds.
Okay.
I'll admit that. I mean, you'd have to really go off, but I think he'll pass. What'd you say? His name was Maris. Sorry, yeah, Maris. Yeah. I think he'll definitely pass him, which is cool because he's a Yankee, but yeah.
It's going to be tough to catch Barry Bonds, but I wouldn't say that it's impossible. Because, you know, players, and you see it in basketball a lot, when a player gets in the zone, it's like everything they throw up, it just makes it. They can just throw any crap up, and it makes it. If he gets hot, he probably could. It will be tough. It would be awesome to watch, you know, the drama that would lead up to something like that. I don't think he's going to catch Barry Bonds, but he will beat Maris. He will beat Maris, but I'll be paying close attention to that. I want to see it.
Okay. Last thing. Do you think Barry Bonds' record will ever be broken by anybody in MLB history? Just quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. I'm in agreement there. I think eventually somebody's going to catch it.
Hopefully a Rocky.
Hopefully. Man, we'll have to pray for that day, though.
For real.
But that is going to do it for today's show of Spittin' Sports here on GoMileHigh.com. Hope you enjoyed it. We will be back on Monday at 6:30 this time. So make sure to catch us then. I'm Josh Coleman with Evan Breese and LeVon Brown. Have a great rest of your night, everybody.